of the nation's high school seniors, today is decision day. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, as high school seniors take that big next step toward college, how on earth are they going to pay for it? And should college, as some say, be free? We're going to take a closer look with your calls. Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, breaking down the stigma surrounding mental health issues as May kicks off Mental Health Awareness Month. Plus, the 48-hour film project comes back to Jacksonville. All of that and more just ahead. But first this morning, today, May 1st, is Decision Day. That's the day most high school seniors have to make their final decisions on where to go to college. And that's where they also face an even bigger challenge. Well, really, their parents do. How to pay for college. It now takes a small or even not so small fortune to go to a quality school in many places. Presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren made headlines recently with an ambitious proposal to cancel most student debt and make college free or nearly free for some institutions. Here's more on that.
Today, it's virtually impossible for a young person to find a high-quality education at an affordable price. We're crushing an entire generation with student loan debt, and the consequences are everywhere. Young people can't buy homes. They can't start businesses. No country builds a future by crushing the dreams and hopes of its young people.
Now, Warren's plan for college and student debt would cost $1.25 trillion by levying a 2% annual tax on the 75,000 families in the U.S. who are worth at least $50 million. So here's the question as we talk about Decision Day in America. Should college be free for kids or at least more affordable? We have two experts here now to share their insights as we welcome Kevin Hyde, interim president of FSCJ and board chair at the University of North Florida. Good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Michelle Larson is here. She's a certified college advisor and the director of Knowledge for College. Hey, Michelle.
Hi. Good morning.
Already getting your calls, too. It's Decision Day, May 1st. As your high school senior chooses a school, how are you planning to pay for college? What do you think of the proposal to cancel most student loan debt and make every public college free? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaNJax. And our Facebook page is open to your comments, too. All right, let's begin with our college president, Kevin Hyde of FSCJ, which you lead the institution that provides the most affordable quality college education anywhere in this community, and it's virtually free for some students. And so what are your thoughts about Warren's plan to cancel student debt and pay for college, make public college free by levying what she calls a wealth tax on the wealthiest families in America?
Well, thanks for having us, Melissa. The issue, I think, really is not so much whether college should be free, but certainly college should be affordable. And one can debate how you reach that point. We are fortunate in the state of Florida that both at the state university system and the state college system, where FSCJ revised, that the state has done a great job of giving the resources to truly make college affordable. Just to put it somewhat in perspective, if we look at data in terms of what the average net price is for a student at FSCJ, it's about $4,000 a year. And then, of course, when aid kicks in, there can be even greater reductions for that. And as you mentioned, many of our students are able to attend at virtually no cost. But there's no doubt that that's not universal and that the cost of college can be high. At University of North Florida, for instance, the cost of a four-year degree now on our current projections will soon be under $10,000 for that full 120-hour degree. So there's a great deal of commitment being done to make it as affordable as it can be, but we certainly understand the burden that can be there.
It's 549-2937. Michelle Larson, for many young college graduates, student loan debt is a crushing burden that many are unable to pay back. And it's the one type of debt that you can't get loan forgiveness
for. That's right.
So it has had a real effect on our economy. You're really good at advising parents about navigating all this. On this decision day, What should parents and high school seniors be thinking about?
So there's a couple things that I would say. If you're a younger, a junior, sophomore, that sort of thing, understand that college selection is going to have a lot to do with how much debt you're going to take on as a family. So especially if you're here in Florida, the Florida college system is really affordable. So just keep that in mind. It's all about college selection. I would say to current students or those who have made their commitments or are making them today, couple of things. Make sure you have a plan to pay for all 4 years. What I find a lot of is people think to themselves, they've got a 529 or they've got some sort of savings, and they say to themselves, you know what? We're going to send our child to this school because we've got this year covered and we'll worry about next year, next year. Mm. Well, next year always comes.
And right? Then what?
Right. Exactly.
Then your student might have to drop out of their dream school if you don't
right.
have a plan to pay.
Or yeah. people make some poor choices. They take on loans perhaps they wouldn't have thought to take on. And something to keep in mind, if you're planning to take out $50,000 in student loan debt, understand that that is not what you'll pay back. What you'll pay back is more like $75,000. And so, again, we sometimes look at money like, oh, I can handle a $50,000 debt, when really you have to handle what is that total debt. And so that's what I would look at. And then from a student perspective, just one thing to think about is your major is more important than where you go to school. And so I work with kids about finding the right fit career for them, because at the end of the day, that's why we go to college, is to get that job. And so make sure you take a major that leads to a degree and have a major selected before you start, if at all possible.
You don't think going undeclared is a good idea?
I do not think that is a good idea. Oftentimes, if you go undeclared, you add another year to college. And that fifth year is always most expensive. And again, I'll speak from a Florida perspective. Bright Futures runs out. Any merit aid runs out. So now you're looking at a huge fifth year bill that you weren't anticipating when you were planning a budget for college.
Florida does have programs like Bright Futures and the Florida prepaid program, Kevin Hyde, so that parents can, if they decide to send their child to school here in Florida, there are ways to make it more affordable. Let me ask you, though, as a follow-up, you know, the recent college admission scandal where celebrities and wealthy Americans were breaking the law and faking their kids' academic and athletic high school transcripts so that they could get their kids into prestigious institutions, that really kind of blew wide open some of the absurdity that goes into this, how desperate many parents are to get their children into what is seen as a prestigious institution. And they're incredibly expensive and incredibly selective. But increasingly more youngsters and parents, I think, are saying, is that really worth the money? Is it really worth that much money to go to that particular school? Is the education really that much better? And why do we place so much prestige on these few institutions?
Whether it's marketing or the parents' personal belief, as to the admissions scandal, first of all, it was an ethical failure on the parents' part. And I don't think you can say anything but that. Mm-hmm. I think Michelle makes a good point. When we're talking about the average net price of a student going, that also includes living expenses and things like that. When we're talking about just net price and tuition, compare, for instance, you could go to FSCJ for around $2,000 a year and take a full load and lead to a degree. And then that average net price may kick up the living expenses, but there's lots of opportunities. And Florida has really been a leader, whether it be the prepaid program or Bright Futures, the commitment of the lottery dollars, et cetera, really has been a leader in doing this. So I certainly agree with Michelle that making an informed consumer choice, but to your point, Melissa, starting mm-hmm. early, whether you buy that prepaid right at the time that your children are born and as soon mm-hmm. as you're able to afford it, you know this is coming 18 years out, and so begin early.
Yeah, begin early. And what are your questions about paying for college on this decision day? And what do you think of proposals to cancel most student loan debt and make public college free? Is that something that America can afford? How important do you think that is? We want your calls. It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Brandon is in Lakeshore right now. Hey, Brandon. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
I think that college should be at least more affordable, if not free, for two reasons. Number one, by making college more affordable, we'll be able to increase the number of college grads that will more likely go into the STEM field, because if college is expensive to begin with, why put yourself through the trouble of obtaining a STEM degree? It takes a lot of investment, time, money, et cetera. And the second reason is to improve access to communities which have been denied opportunities throughout U.S. history, such as the black population in the United States.
Okay, Brandon, thanks for that. You know, Michelle Larson, the whole notion of making college free or virtually free, one of the big calling cards or supporters of that idea is that it will make college more affordable, in particular, more accessible mm-hmm. for minority students.
Well, that is actually true. I would encourage people to understand how the whole college funding works. I think there's a lot of opportunities for low-income students in the Pell Grant, which is a federal grant. In state, most states have programs for low-income students. I think it's more about getting the information out of programs that are already available versus just saying it's free for everybody. Because I think when you make it free for everybody, perhaps some people who would be better suited in a different type of career end up just going to college because it's there and because it's free. And again, I just want to repeat that Florida schools, I think, have done a great job in with Bright Futures, with, again, the Pell Grant that's available, high-quality universities at a lower cost. And just keep in mind that it is all about college selection. You have to be smart as a consumer. I think we've, as parents, have forgotten that we're the customer, right? We end up going to these schools and we say, please take our child, please take our child. Well, it'll be $60,000 a year. Okay, that's fine. Right?
Yeah. Now, you also made a point about the fact that not every child needs to go to college. And that really brings up a kind of a related prong of this discussion, which is that high schools have become very college focused. And only recently have they started to swing back around right. to the idea of vocational education,
right.
training kids to do things other than go to higher ed, training them for a trade.
You know, that's heartbreaking to me, to be honest with you. I think that there are just some people who are passionate about doing things that don't require a four-year degree. There are a lot of two-year degrees that you can get that are high-paying, like stenographer, like a cardiotech. You don't have to have a four-year degree. That's a misnomer. And I read about a study that by 2020, there'll be 13 million more college grads and only 7 million more jobs that require a college degree. So what you're finding is that kids are graduating from college with a degree and then working in a job that doesn't require a degree. And so now they have all this debt and they're working in a job that didn't even need what they paid for.
Let's go to John on the South Side. John, good morning. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. Well, my comment is this, that our system of education for our children should be for the best for the country and for the future. What we forget is that our kids is the future. So making college free is a great thing, because most of our industrialized country does this already. Cuba puts out more doctors than I think the last thing I read in the top two countries. So why is it that we in America constantly talking about the charge of educating our children, but yet we will say, oh, our kids are falling behind. Our schools, our public schools are not doing good. And then our vocational, for one, I come up in the time where you had vocation in high school. Why was that stopped? Think about it.
Yeah.
At the same time that the vocation was stopped, mass incarceration started. So it's bigger than what we want to look at.
Thanks, John. Yeah. You know, they did recently start back up a vocational academy in the Duval County Public Schools, Kevin Hyde. Mm-hmm. Just making a note of that. But certainly the overall trend has been away from that. And Go ahead.
But what you're seeing, particularly at the state college system, the Florida college system, you are seeing a real move toward career and workforce education. For instance, at FSCJ, we're probably equally split between students who are pursuing what we would call either a stackable credential, a workforce certificate, career and education workforce, as opposed to the traditional associate in arts degree, associate in science. And Governor DeSantis has made it clear that his plan is to move Florida to the very forefront in this area. And I think that's recognizing exactly where the workforce is going. So increasingly at the public level, we are seeing that this is the, there's going to be options for both elements of that.
Steve on the West Side. Hi, Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead. What are your thoughts about paying for college?
Well, I've got a couple of things I'd like to mention. One, you mentioned that there'll be an imbalance between a college education and a college need for an or a society's need for that education. What I'd like to see is have it where certain degrees are more easily acquired, because if you get a business degree, I can't tell you how many people I've come across that got, let's just say, I don't know, degrees that were very specific. And now they're working in business. And if we could promote more business degrees, even if you go into a business, an industry like plumbing, your business is going to be enhanced by getting a business degree. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I do.
The other thing I'd like to point out, when I went to FSCJ, I was a tutor for math. And when I graduated with my bachelor's degree a few years later, I thought, well, you know, maybe I could be a remedial math instructor at FSCJ. And it was made very clear to me that they only wanted PhDs. And I thought, if you have a PhD that's teaching remedial math, odds are they're probably not that good at it, if that's all they can get.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Steve.
If we're going to give free education, we need to make it practical.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for that point. John in Ponte Vedra. Hi, John. Good morning. Go ahead, John.
Jim. College is free in Germany. Why can't it be free in America?
Okay, let's get back to that point, which is, you know, it's really a very a deep political divide in this country over what we pay for and how we pay for it, whether we go the route of what some presidential candidates are calling for, which is a more social democratic form of government where college and education and healthcare are pretty much paid for through your taxes, mm-hmm. or whether we keep on the path that we are on, which is routing most of that through the private market. And so, you know, as an interim college president, Kevin Hyde, what about the politics of this?
Well, I think we're getting into really the philosophy here. The way I would look at it is college is an investment into your future. And I think personally there ought to be some in personal investment into that. Now, we can debate what level of tuition payment that ought to be, but there ought to be some investment in that, because every study shows that a college graduate over the course of their lifetime is going to more than earn back what they investment they make. You could look at states like Tennessee, which has made a two-year community college virtually free for all of its residents. And certainly there's a lot of merit to that, and Tennessee, being a very conservative state like Florida, has found a way to make that work. So somewhere in there, I think that there is a balance, but I do think that it's important for an investment, a personal investment, to be made. It's a question of degree and level of that investment.
What about the argument that, you know, our parents and grandparents' generations could make a good living with a high school diploma, which was free? You know, universal free high school education has been the norm in this country for a long time through our tax dollars. What about the argument that in today's global economy, you have to have a college degree to make a good living in most careers, and that those that are espousing that it be treated the way a high school diploma used to be, that it should be free in that sense, that it should be just automatically part of what we as a society provide for young people in order that they have a chance at a decent earning career.
And that is one of the political arguments Senator Warren is making, and there's some validity to it. When we're talking about the value of a college degree, as we were earlier discussing, I think what we're really talking about is post-secondary training, whether that be at FSCJ, for instance, we call it clock hours and credit hours, career and education workforce versus what we would typically call the academic classes. And one should not confuse there is academic requirements in both of those courses of study. So that's something that is going to have to be debated. I think, for instance, going back, as we've talked about, Florida being on a very good course in the sense of the state university system is recognized as being the best in the nation. The legislature has provided the resources to ensure that those types of things can occur both at the university system and the Florida college system. Whether we need to take that next step to completely make it free, that's a debate that one can have, but we're on a good track already.
Lots of emails and tweets on this May 1st decision day as we talk about the high cost of college. Here's an email from John in St. Augustine. Why does a college education cost so much? We can afford and support free professional college sports teams, but not education. Why is a college education required to get a good job? Why have we not demanded that our high school curriculum keep pace with workplace demands? Lots of tweets, too. Here are just a few coming into the show. Lane tweets the show, the return on investment is an educated citizenry. And some more tweets. Keep in mind that interest rates for student loans are higher than they are for mortgages or car loans. Here's another tweet. Not everyone knows what they want to do for a living when they're 18 years old. That's why we have general education classes. Many students change their major up to 4 times. And here's one more. Why are we even having this debate? Because states divested from public education and capitalism has overtaken universities, turning them into degree mills. We need diverse educational opportunities. Okay, so Michelle Larson, what about that? Is the business model of a lot of elite higher education institutions? I think that we talked about the college admissions scandal a few minutes ago and how competitive it is for these schools to attract the top students and continue to charge really top shelf tuition rates, you know. Is the business model of some of these schools, is it really valid? I mean, is it really worth paying however much it costs? Let's just pick any school out of the hat, Vanderbilt University or Amherst College in the Northeast, right, or Stanford. Is it really worth the money?
So in my opinion, it's not. I will tell you that it's more about your major. I read an article one time about this gal who graduated from a high school that was very competitive, and all these accolades were given to her neighbor who got into Columbia, who was going to Columbia at a cost of, I think it was $50,000 at the time, and who had tons of student debt, whose family had tons of student debt. And you know what she said? She's teaching in the classroom next to mine.
No, really?
And I have no debt. And so I would focus people on their major. If you can get into a private school, a selective school, then you can get into a smaller, less known school, and they'll throw money at you. You know, it'll be much more affordable. And I think, again, I just go back to, we parents have to decide, we're not paying that. You know, it's a market driven. I just don't believe there's any government program that's ever going to fix this issue. It is a market driven issue. And like I said, we have to remember that we're the customer, and we have to say, you know, I'm not paying $60,000 a year for an undergraduate degree, because at the end of the day, nobody cares where you got your undergraduate degree.
Perry writes on our Facebook page, structural unemployment should be a factor in this discussion. If someone gets a degree in a job the economy desperately needs to be filled, then their degree should be free, but they have to work in that industry for 5 years after graduating. Lots of ideas from all of our listeners out there. Let's go to Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. Good morning. What are your thoughts this morning?
Good morning. Let me turn this off speaker. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just disappointing. Once again, this is where crony capitalism has taken over. You used to be able to get a college degree while working at a waiter or waitress. But as soon as we got profit involved with it, banks making billions, trillions of dollars off our children and turning our children into a revenue stream, and frankly, politicians like, I don't remember the president's name of, you know, the legislature, who turned around and became a president of a college. So they're all in cahoots together to use our children to profit. And if you don't sign this loan for the rest of your life, well, you know, you might not get a job. So using fear to extort money from our children and a debt is just an embarrassment. If you work at a college and you make more than six figures, these presidents who make $1 million and the bankers that are making millions of dollars, you're just profiting from our children. And that's just immoral, unethical, and just wrong. But that's America. We're going to profit from anything we can, the ill and our children.
All right, Daryl, thanks for that. All right, let me get your thoughts about the numbers of this, Kevin Hyde. Mm-hmm. Student loan debt has soared to $1.4 trillion in 2017. The average student's loan debt went from about $18,000 to $38,000. And there's even millions of people over the age of 60 with big student loan debt. You know, and again, this is a higher interest loan debt, and it can't be forgiven in the way that other hardship cases are allowed to be written off. So while the ideas about canceling student loan debt altogether, making college free, that's really kind of moving the political Overton window sharply to the left, and those ideas may not make it through the political process. But at the very least, it seems as though the country's having a conversation about the weight of these debts and how they are dragging down young people's prospects.
And it is time to have this conversation. When you're talking about a student loan debt of that magnitude, whether collectively or individual, people are having to make decisions and forestalling other things they would otherwise be doing in their life, thinking about purchasing a home, starting a new business, et cetera. So it is time for that conversation. I think what we've talked a lot about here today is really the student and the parent making informed choices. Again, going back to whether the state college system or the university system, a student who knows what they want to do, who maybe does a 2+2, 2 years at a community college or a state college, and then 2 years in the state university system, and who graduates on time, meaning they're taking 120 hours or very few over that, is going to be able to obtain a degree in a very affordable way. If you don't make those types of choices, you can find yourself in the situation that we've been discussing, which is very unfortunate. It has a long-term impact. But I'm glad we're having this discussion because we need to be informed students. We need to be informed consumers and to hold us all accountable as we are the ones providing this education.
Okay, Michelle, your final advice for parents as kids get ready to take that next big leap into their expensive futures.
Yes. So I would say my final piece of advice for those children are it's college selection. It's being informed. I'm actually offering a download about the 10 key ways to save money on college. And if you go to reducecollegecost.com, you can get that download for free of charge. It's 10 things that you need to think about. Again, this isn't for those kids that have just made their decision today. It's for younger kids. But I think I've tried to put a lot of valuable information in a one-page giveaway.
I'll be downloading that, too.
Thank you.
We all need the information, don't we? All of us with kids getting close to that stage of life. So thank you so much for being here. Kevin Hyde, interim president of FSCJ, board chair of UNF, and Michelle Larson. She's a certified college advisor and the director of Knowledge for College. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Later in the hour, I'll look at the 48-hour film project in Jacksonville. And up next, marking Mental Health Awareness Month. We'll be right back.
Join WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT Studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting WJCT.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
The 2019 Florida lawmaking session, a fast-moving mix of policy, politics, and personalities. Follow the debates, watch the bargaining chips fly, and hear what it all means for everyone who calls Florida home. The 2019 Florida lawmaking session, every weeknight on Capitol Report.
Tonight at 6:30 on 89.9 FM.
That sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. They're a growing catering business here on the First Coast. In today's Movable Feast, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with Varushka of The Perfect Pair.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy.
What are you doing at The Perfect Pair? And where are you from? And how did you get started? So there's a lot of questions, but let's talk about coming to America.
I moved to the U.S. in 2009 to work for the Ritz-Carlton. I've lived all over the world, and I actually moved out to Seattle for a while, too. And then I moved back, and I'm so happy with everything that's happening, like culinary-wise, the restaurants, just everything is really evolving. And I'm happy to be a part of that. I feel like I can contribute.
Well, I believe that The Perfect Pair, whenever I've tasted any of your creations or seen them, the people around me all go, wow, this is different. This is unique. Your catering is spectacular. But the visual is very unique. And recently, I was thrilled to see that you were unveiling a new division of your catering and culinary business called the Cook Cake. And I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, K-O-E-K, cake.
You are.
Tell me what it is.
So cook cake means, so cook is the word for cake in Afrikaans, which is my mother language, and it means cake. So coming from a pastry background, I kind of left it for a while and I was really missing it. And I decided that I really just needed to get back into it and do something that, you know, I loved in pastry, because it can be stressful, you know, making huge wedding cakes and that kind of thing. So I started Cook Cake, and I thought it was great just because it means cake, and, you know, who doesn't need cake? And so I only make 6-inch cakes. I don't make any other sizes. And each cake is like unique in its own way.
You definitely pack a wallop into those 6-inch cakes.
Yes.
Well, I know that you are almost booked for every month coming up in the beautiful party season weather, but we're going to be watching your cook cakes, your cake cakes, very carefully, Varushka. Thank you so much for being with us on Movable Feast and bringing us The Perfect Pair.
You're welcome.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
We'll be right back.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, mental health issues are a growing public health concern in America. More than 44 million adults suffer from a mental health issue, and an estimated 17 million kids as well. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Florida ranks in the bottom 10% of states providing good access to mental health care. But there are many local efforts underway to improve access and improve those numbers. We're going to share them right now as we kick off Mental Health Awareness Month with Dr. Terry Andrews, Administrator of Behavioral Health at Baptist Health. Dr. Andrews, good morning.
Good morning.
And Cheryl Johnson, she's founder of Alex's Dragonfly Revolution. It's a program designed to raise awareness and give people tools to recognize the signs of mental illness. Cheryl, good to see you.
Good morning.
And in a moment, we'll hear from Baptist about all of the amazing work they're doing around mental and behavioral health. But first, let's hear your story, Cheryl. You lost your oldest son last year, and he had been suffering from depression and anxiety. And I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, Alex was diagnosed with depression and anxiety during high school. And we had managed to navigate that and were very lucky. He went off to the University of Georgia, but starting in his junior year, started to struggle more. We had a pretty difficult time navigating care. He was technically an adult. He was away at college. We were sort of wandering around, and unfortunately, it's a pretty debilitating disease, and without help, it can be extremely deteriorating. And we lost him in August of 2017.
And I'm so sorry. And so you turned your grief into activism. What is Alex's Dragonfly Revolution?
So one of the things that we knew during our journey with him and then after we lost him was that the path to finding help and seeking help is burdened by stigma of mental illness. And so it took a little while to figure out where our mission would be. And our goal is to raise awareness and help break down the stigma associated with mental illness, help people understand that it is a disease and not a behavior.
And you have dragonfly pins that you're wearing that I guess are the symbol of this. Is that right?
We do. We have a photo of Alex. If you go on our webpage, dragonflycoalition.org, or on our Facebook page, there's a photo of Alex that was taken when he was little when a dragonfly landed on his nose. And he thought it was the greatest thing ever. And it's been a great way for us to remember what a good kid he was. And it sort of developed over time and became a pin and a symbol that we use to remember him and to spread awareness. And we wear the pins. And whenever anybody asks about them, we share one. And we created a program called Wear One, Share One, where people can buy a pin with a card that gives you the signs and symptoms of mental illness and helps you break down the stigma.
Now, you're also working with Baptist Health to enhance their wraparound programs that support patients and families. Dr. Terry Andrews, you direct behavioral health at Baptist, and Baptist has certainly been a leader in this space here on the First Coast. And so as we talk about Mental Health Awareness Month, what are the most important points people need to take in to understand how they can better access the care that they and their loved ones need?
You know, with mental health being, ranking bottom across the United States in the state of Florida, one of the things that we're trying to do in Northeast Florida is provide better access and also navigating the system. You know, when I first met Cheryl and subsequently later her husband, Todd, and heard about Alex's story, you know, it really highlights the need for us to be able to work within the system, but then also be able to have all of our providers work on a team of care in caring for these patients. Mm-hmm. And so as a community, what we are trying to do is make sure that, not only these transitional adults, which is the 18 to 26-year-old range, have access to care, but also being able to figure out a way to allow their parents to be able to have coordinated care as well and participate.
How about the insurance piece? It's very difficult for a lot of people, even with good insurance, to pay for great mental health care. Insurance companies don't cover this enough. What's it going to take to change that?
We have to have a legislative effort and really advocate for mental health, not only within the state, but at the federal level. You know, we have to have parity. And, you know, many insurance companies now, they have these high deductibles for mental health. And it's very difficult for parents and adults to be able to access mental health.
Cheryl, could that have made a difference for your son, Alex? Would that have helped his access to care or not?
Absolutely. I mean, finding a care provider who will take your insurance, or even finding a care provider who has the time in the short term to treat a patient, is a challenge. Getting the coverage, I think one of the things that has to happen legislatively and with our government is to change their mind about where mental health fits. When I talk about it, I talk about how physical and mental health are the foundation of our lives. When it comes to physical health, there are all kinds of wellness plans that are covered completely. And even though mental health sits on parity with the foundational premise for someone's life, we don't treat it that way. And mm-hmm. part of what I'm committed to do is to help transform people's thinking about how foundational someone's mental health is on the rest of their life.
You had a reception at Baptist this week to announce your organization's initial endowment to create, this is a special care coordinator role at Baptist Health for young adults, right?
Yes, it's really, really exciting. I reached out to Baptist in January through some connections we had. Robert Hill, who's very active in the Baptist Foundation, Robert was really gracious and introduced me to Dr. Andrews and other members of the Baptist Foundation. And it was amazing. We had a lunch meeting. I had no idea how far it would go. And it was great that we listened to each other and recognized a change we can make. And last mm-hmm. night we did announce the initial endowment to create the role that will help people navigate, create collective family care, and hopefully improve the long-term benefits of staying in counseling.
So hopefully this will make things a little less complicated for families, Dr. Andrews, because it can be a maze navigating this system.
Yes. I mean, even someone like myself that's within the mental health industry, you know, it can be daunting. It can be tough. And so, like I said, when we heard her story or Alex's story, we thought, you know, this is perfect timing. This is something that we've been talking about at Baptist as far as being able to provide better coordination of care and essentially kind of a navigator or a coach, if you will, to be able to help these transitional adults. And so with the partnership of the foundation and folks can be able to contribute there by calling 202-2919 or foundation.baptistjacks.com. and reference the Dragonfly Fund. And so we're excited to be able to launch this and go forward.
Very nice. And we're excited to let everyone hear about it as we begin Mental Health Awareness Month. So thank you both so much. Reach out for help if you're struggling or if your loved one is. Don't be afraid to get that help. And call Baptist Behavioral Health if you're having trouble accessing care. And thank you, Dr. Terry Andrews with Baptist, Cheryl Johnson, who has founded Alex's Dragonfly Revolution and the new fund and part of the foundation at Baptist Health. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, up next, if you had just 48 hours to make a movie, what would it look like? We'll look at the 48-hour film project right after this.
On the next Fresh Air, how oligarchs, kleptocrats, and crooks hide their ill-gotten fortunes in shell companies, tax havens, and real estate. We talk with journalist Oliver Bulow, author of Moneyland, about this secretive transnational world. He runs kleptocracy tours in London of mansions bought by corrupt foreign leaders and oligarchs stashing their wealth. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Alabama lawmakers are considering an outright ban on abortion in defiance of U.S. Supreme Court precedent.
This bill criminalizes abortion, basically.
It's part of a strategy to get an abortion rights case before a conservative majority Supreme Court. Plus the latest on the Attorney General's congressional testimony on the Mueller report. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer started USA Facts because he wanted one place to go to for government statistics.
I wanted to understand what government was doing, where the money was coming from, what it was being spent on, and what kind of outcomes government was getting.
We'll speak with Steve Ballmer next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Americans eat an estimated 50 billion burgers a year, but the meat we eat is changing. Burger King is the latest to get on the bandwagon, offering beefless burgers, and it's sounding alarms for the country's cattle farmers. What's behind this meatless moment? That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Finally, this hour, it's the chance for local filmmakers to compete to see who can make the best short film in only 48 hours. The winning feature will go up against others from around the world at Filmapalooza 2020 for a chance at the grand prize and even an opportunity to screen at the Cannes Film Festival. That's right. And this is all courtesy of Jacksonville's own 48-hour film project. Registration is open right now. City producers of the project are Monique and Adam Madrid, and they join us now in studio. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. And it's so good to have you. This is a bit of movie magic. The 48-hour film project is such a great idea. Monique, let's start with you. People only have 48 hours to complete their short film. So the clock is really running. How does it work?
So we have a kickoff event, and it'll be at Hemming Park. And so they actually have to spin the wheel to get a genre. They don't know what genre they're going to get until they spin the wheel. And then every group will have to put a prop, a line, and a character universally in their films. And so, boom, they run. 7:30, they hit it, and they run, and they make this film start, finish, and they run back to Hemming Park on Sunday, May 19th, to drop it off in a timely fashion so that way we can show it. Completed films can go on to compete. Incompleted films, they can still get screened, but they don't get to go to the big prize.
I see. So only the best films, Adam, make it to national or even international prominence, but still, it's a fun, exciting project for local filmmakers to get involved with.
Absolutely. And like I said, the talent that we have here in Jacksonville is amazing. And we cannot wait to have these films screened for everyone. We're going to be at Mosh Museum at the Planetarium. And it's really a great experience for everyone to check out to see their films. Again, that's going to be on it's going to be on May 21st, 22nd, 23rd mm-hmm. at 7 p.m. And like I said, we're looking forward to it.
Okay. So the festival, May 21st through the 23rd at the Mosh in the Gooding Planetarium, which is a great place to screen something. But as you said, Monique, registration is open now. It ends May 17th. You can register at 48hourfilm.com/Jacksonville. And then the big kickoff event is May 17th. Mm-hmm. What else do people need to know to register to compete in the 48-hour film project?
Honestly, as long as they go to the website, all the information will be right there. But when they come to the actual kickoff, if they have any questions, because a lot of filmmakers do, we'll have a booth there to where they can ask, and they can even register at that day, you know, right before we actually do the kickoff event. But we'll have an actual booth there to where they can have information to any questions they have.
And it's amazing, isn't it, what people come up with in 48 hours, how good the short films are.
They're brilliant. I'm questioning it too sometimes. I'm like, really? 48 hours? There's no way. But they do, because like I said, the elements are so thrown at them last minute that there's no way they can do this with, you know, months in advance. And they're brilliant. And so also we want to let the public know too, you know, just because this event is about filmmakers, it's also cool for the public to kind of really get exposed to some local filmmakers that are really brilliant and doing some awesome things. And mm-hmm. I think they'll get a kick, whether it's a laugh or cry, they'll get something out of it. So it's for the public too.
That's right. The public needs to come and enjoy the completed films, Adam. It's fun to watch them.
Absolutely. And again, with that, you know, again, we're going to make this an event. We want this to be a special thing here in Jacksonville. And like I said, it's going to be excitement going on, especially at the kickoff. We have DJ Jimmy Hustle going to be there. We're going to have a lot of events, food trucks, everything like that. Again, and then once they come out to the experience at Mosh Museum at the Brian Gooding Planetarium, it's just we want to make this, like I said, just an unforgettable moment for them.
Okay, so if you are a budding filmmaker, you can register now to enter the 48-hour film project. Registration ends May 17th, so don't wait. Go to 48hourfilm.com/Jacksonville. And the big festival, as we're hearing, is May 21st through the 22nd at the Mosh. Monique and Adam Madrid producing the 48-hour film project. Can't wait to see the films. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And if you have any questions about the show, we always want your feedback. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. On tomorrow's show, what makes a child-friendly city? That's tomorrow. Meanwhile, 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for being with us. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Have a great Wednesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.